thank you for downloading the Border Perspective audio podcast. I am your host, Christian Salinas. This week's episode features an interesting interview discussion with a local award-winning journalist, Travis M. Whitehead. Now, if you read the Monitor, the Bronzeville Herald, and the Valley Morning Star, just to mention a few, that name might sound very familiar to you. Travis has been writing articles for these publications for over the last decade, so we were able to sit down with him and talk a little bit about what's been happening in the Rio Grande Valley, and also specifically we were able to talk to him about a new project that he's working on that he's very excited about, and it's very interesting. We'll talk about that in the interview, so we'll go ahead and fade into that in just a minute. I did want to mention that if you're interested in looking up some of our past episodes, you can do so by visiting our archives, which are on our website, bpscast.com, where you'll also be able to find our most recent contact information. And we'll go ahead and fade into our interview now with Travis Whitehead. We're here today with Travis Whitehead. First of all, Travis, how are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Travis Whitehead is a journalist for local publications, and we'll get into specific publications in just a minute. But I wanted, Travis, to give you an opportunity to, first of all, tell us a little bit about yourself. First of all, where are you from?
I'm originally from Corpus Christi, Texas, right up the coast.
And you were telling me earlier that you moved to the Valley about 13 years ago?
Uh-huh.
Now, you say that the Valley has changed since you moved here. Would you say that all of these changes are for the benefit of the Rio Grande Valley, or the opposite?
Overall, I think it's a benefit. I'm sorry to see agriculture kind of declining, because that's been a big part of the Valley for many decades. But the other stuff, the building, all these new restaurants and bookstores and so forth, I think is very good.
Being down here in the Valley, do you travel to Mexico a lot?
I have traveled to Mexico a great deal. I haven't done so lately because the violence was getting really bad. But when I started hearing stories about them pulling people off passenger buses and then you find them in these mass graves, that's when I decided I better stay put for a while.
Now, I think you would have an interesting perspective on this. Now, a lot of the times when it comes to popular news or news that is spoken of a lot in the media, a lot of times it's hard to tell whether it's being downplayed or if it's being exaggerated. In your point of view, what's happening along the border, do you feel that the media is doing a good job of it, covering it, or maybe even underestimating it?
I think the media is doing a good job of covering it. I see big headlines in the Mexican newspapers, and as well as the Herald. We've had some really good reporters who have good contacts with the authorities in Mexico, and I think the picture, in the past, I thought they were exaggerating it, but not anymore. I just know that directly south of where I'm at the Brownsville Herald, and directly south of us, they found these mass graves, and I'm hearing stories about them pulling people off buses, and there's people north of the border, Mercedes and other towns in the Valley that say they have relatives that just disappeared. And in some cases, their loved ones texted them and said, "We've been taken." And then that's the last they heard of them. So that's when they start pulling people off buses, and that's the way I generally like to travel. That's when I start saying that it's time for me to stay put for a while.
Is that advice that you would be comfortable giving to anybody who asks if it's safe to go to Mexico right now?
Yes, I would say that.
Now, you mentioned you work at the Bronzeville Herald now, but I know you also work for other publications. Could you just explain a little bit about how that works?
Okay. I'm the regional features reporter for the Rio Grande Valley. I write for both the Herald and the Star and the Monitor, which are all part of Freedom Communications. and all three newspapers give me assignments.
Oh, okay. Now, was that always the case? Were they always owned by Freedom Communications?
Oh, yes. Yeah, it's always been part of the Freedom Network.
As you write an article, because Freedom Communications is a pretty big it's a pretty big media. How do you feel about what your readers are going to get out of your article? I mean, do you think about your readers while you're writing the article?
Well, yeah, you have to. When you're interviewing for a story, you have to be thinking about what do my readers want to know about this. So as I'm formulating questions, I'm thinking about how the story is going to play out and what else the reader would want to know about this particular subject. I mean, recently I did a story about makeovers that people could purchase for their moms for Mother's Day, and that was a subject I knew absolutely nothing about at all. And again, that's where the being able to explore different things while focusing on one thing all at the same time comes into play. Like, I get to learn about things that I would otherwise not have any exposure to at all. So I had to start from scratch, and I just had to keep asking a lot of questions, and I was asking as though I were the reader wanting to learn about something that I knew nothing about. So, yeah, that's very important to be thinking about your reader. Now, I didn't used to be like that. I used to be very self-involved in a story and get really prosaic and really kind of literary. And that was kind of, to a certain extent, my artistic license, and then to a certain extent it was a bit egocentric. I kind of got really caught up in what I was doing, didn't want to be bothered with a lot of other stuff, but I've kind of matured beyond that to where now I think a lot more about the reader than I used to.
And in your experience of what you've noticed, I mean, you were talking earlier about how there wasn't bookstores before in McAllen and how they are right now, and you're talking about how you concentrate on what the reader would think of your story. What has your perception been as far as readership in the Rio Grande Valley, especially with the new younger generations coming in? Does it seem like the younger generation likes to read?
I think they do. You know, they have the Festiva editor, the features editor over at the Monitor, who's targeting a younger audience, like the teen audience in the 20s and so forth. But yeah, I think a lot of people, you know, young people like to read.
In your career as a journalist here in the Valley, have there been several stories, or maybe just one story specifically, or that you can use as an example, that have really affected you in some way, either emotionally or
I had the opportunity to do a series of stories on Hidalgo County homeless people, homelessness in Hidalgo County. That was back in 2004 and 2005. Actually, I wrote the stories in 2004. And it was really insightful getting to know these people, and you realize very quickly that these are not stupid people. They're very well educated. They're very academically and worldly intelligence. I sat there, you know, visited with them in a park for many long hours and listened to their banter about all kinds of subjects, history, politics, music, philosophy, you name it, they could talk about it. And I came to realize that homelessness is something that can happen to anybody. All these guys had run into some terrible situation where they were out on the street, and once you're out on the street, it begins this vicious cycle, because if you're on the street, you can't get a job, and if you don't have a job, you can't get off the street. So they got the Hidalgo County Homeless Coalition over there that tries to help people end that cycle and get on their feet and get moved into an apartment and get a job and so forth. But, you know, I kind of like to tell people I was hoboing with the homeless, but I only spent a few separate days with them. I'd like to spend a week or even a month with them, just getting to know them. I won an Associated Press Award for this project, but the thing that mattered most was that one of the people I profiled in that series was a Vietnam vet who had had a falling out with his family several years before. And they saw him in the story, saw his picture staring up at him off the front page of the paper, and saw his name in there, and they came looking for him. They asked me to meet him at the park where I had seen him. We couldn't find him, and asked around some of the other homeless people, and they said he'd gone up to the VA hospital in San Antonio. And his family jumped in the car, drove up to San Antonio to the VA hospital, and they found him. They brought him back home. He was reunited with his family. Old wounds were healed. And the last time I talked to him, he was lying in a warm, dry bed with a roof over his head and getting fat on homemade cookies. So that's the thing that I am the most proud of, more than the Associated Press Award, was just helping to facilitate this man getting off the street and reuniting with his family and, you know, moving on with his life.
Wow, that's a really amazing story.
Yeah, it meant a lot to me to be able to be a part of that.
Now, changing subjects a little bit, I wanted to talk about a new project that you're actually working on, and you seem to be very passionate about. You're writing a book. Could you tell us about this book?
Yes. I spent 8 months back in 2008 living down in the Mexican state of Michoacán. It's west of Mexico City. It's a very diverse landscape, very diverse culinary tradition, and very diverse craftsmanship. I traveled all over Mexico. But I really became fascinated by Michoacán. I was working on another project that didn't pan out, but I got fascinated by the artisans down there. So I've written a book about the artisans. What I did was I spent 8 months traveling out to the little villages and visiting with the artisans in their workshops and seeing how they create all their different crafts, whether it be pottery or textiles or wood carving, copper smithing. I even knew this one woman who created paintings using the different colored feathers of different birds and just placing them very delicately together with tweezers. And there's a husband and wife team that he made an indigenous form of lacquerware called maque, using different kinds of soils, creating very colorful plates using these different soils from different parts of the state. And she made something called pasta de caña, in which she made these crucifixion figures using corn stalks. And it's just very elaborate. It's all very involved. And what I did is I wrote a series of essays just telling the stories, not only about what they do, but about who they are. I mean, I spent many long hours with them in their shops, in their homes, and eating with them and learning about their stories. And I kind of interwove the technique with a larger picture about who these people are and how they live.
Could you give us an example or just a little description as to what the everyday or day-to-day life is for some of these people?
Well, let me see. In Gucucho, I knew this family. There's this woman that was very open, very receptive to me. And to anybody who wanted to take pictures and visit her and get to know her, and she was very open to it. And I spent a lot of time with that family. And there was an incident that happened in Morelia on September 15th. the night the governor comes out and gives the grito for Dieciséis, and somebody came up with a bright idea of throwing two grenades into the crowd and killing eight people and injuring more than 100. And I drove out. I had some more questions, some more information I needed to get from this woman and her son. So I drove out there, wondering if I was going to get kidnapped, what was going to happen. And I was going to speak with her son, and he was going to help me translate, but he was off cutting wood. So I spent the day with this woman again. And at one point, they kind of motioned for me, and let's go in your car, and we went out to another cornfield, and they gathered up a bunch of ears of corn, and we loaded it up in the trunk of my car and drove back to her place, and we spent the afternoon shucking corn. So it kind of alternates between shucking corn to make huchepos, which is another form of tamale, and making cucuchos and doing needlepoint. And they get so much done, but I never saw them in any kind of a really big hurry. They just plan it out, and they know what they have to do, and they do it.
So it's not, you mentioned, what is the name of the language that they speak?
I'm sorry?
What did you say was the name of the language?
Okay, these are Purépecha Indians. And the language they speak is called Purépecha.
And is that... you said that this woman's son was the one that would help you translate or communicate with the rest of the community?
Yeah. Yeah, because he'd spent 14 years in Portland, Oregon.
What is it, the art that they make, obviously it's art, but it is also, is that their main source of revenue or income?
Yes. Yeah, that's their main source of income. Okay. A lot of the other stuff, the agricultural stuff, they sell some of the corn, but they eat a lot of it too.
Oh, okay. Who do they mainly sell to? Who are buying all of these crafts?
Well, sometimes it's tourists. They have two big crafts fairs. One is Domingo de Ramos in the spring, and the other one is Day of the Dead in the fall. But on the they also make for a lot of Mexican businessmen who put in orders. One day when I went out there, I called ahead to meet with this woman's son, and by the time I got out there, they were working like mad to fill an order they had gotten from some customer in Zahuayo, which is another town in western Michoacán. And they get orders from a lot of different businesses that want to have these pots as decor in their businesses.
Would you say that, because usually, I mean, I guess when people think about central, I guess Mexico or south of Mexico, there usually poverty comes into mind. Would you say that this is a community that's affected by poverty, but at the same time benefits a lot from the art that they do?
Depends on what you mean by poverty. They are relatively happy with what they have as far as their lifestyle is concerned. They have their trucks and their vehicles to transport things. They're really pretty rustic. I mean, I think their main concern is just finding markets to sell their goods and getting a fair price for what they can make. I think they would like to have more infrastructure. They don't have any running water, or they just don't have the infrastructure that I think that they would like to have. But nobody's hungry, and nobody's without adequate clothing. But I think, like anybody, they'd like to be able to have more markets to sell their goods and make more money and be able to feed themselves.
Do you feel that, is part of the motivation for writing this book, do you feel it's because this is something, an art form that is underappreciated?
I think it's underappreciated. I think people see the artwork, but they don't know the story behind it. And that's what I'm trying to tell is, you know, you see it. I mean, there's places here in the valley where it's for sale. There's a place out on 1015, but between 281 and the Progresso Bridge, there's a place there on the left-hand side where they sell a lot of stuff from Michoacan, including a bunch of pots from Cocucho. You can see the stuff, but people don't know all the work that goes into it, and they don't know about the people who make it. You know, there's all kinds of books out there that tell how the stuff is made, but what about the people who make it? And so that's what I'm trying to tell, is a human story behind the craft story. We have manufactured goods, and I'm all for that, but I think we also need to appreciate and be aware and show our gratitude for a lifestyle that is conducive to something like this. The whole experience of being Purépecha and being a villager and being an artisan, it's a wonderful lifestyle. It's simple yet elaborate, and I just think it needs to be recognized.
So you would say that is your overall goal with the book? Well, we're just about out of time for this podcast. I did want to give you an opportunity to just let us know when we can expect to be able to find your book.
It's tentatively scheduled to come out in October, but that can always change. These things usually take a lot longer than you expect them to change, but the tentative release date is October.
Oh, okay. And I did want to mention that you do have a website or blog set up that talks a little bit more about it. And I'll definitely put a link to that, or there will be a link to that available within the post for this podcast.
I appreciate it.
I guess in conclusion, I just wanted to give you an opportunity, for example, to say if some of your longtime readers are listening to this podcast, and maybe for some reason they've never actually heard your voice, being that you work in publications. Is there anything that you'd like to express to your long-term readers?
Well, I just appreciate their readership. I appreciate their interest and any feedback they can give me about my writing and anything they'd like to see, you know, any stories that they would like to see written. Always open to suggestions.
Okay, well, thank you. Thank you very much for being with us today.
It's my pleasure.
And again, you can always find, you can always read Travis's articles in the Monitor, the Bronzeville Herald, and the Festiva magazine. Did I leave?
And also Valley Morning Star.
And the Valley Morning Star. So you can definitely keep up with Travis Whitehead and all of his upcoming articles. And that's it for this week's episode. Just wanted to mention, if you would like to stay updated with what's happening with Travis's book, you can do so by visiting his site. We'll go ahead and put a link to that on our website at bpscast.com. Thank you very much for downloading this podcast.